Welcome. Phoenix Options Investors Networking Traders, or POINT, is a nonprofit options trading club dedicated to helping our members become successful traders. POINT specializes in teaching all option strategies by utilizing successful traders who are willing to share their expertise and methodology with other traders. We hope you enjoy our POINT meeting and that you can use this information on your path to success.
Thank you, Eric, for that brilliant introduction. I am happy to be reporting to you from Honolulu. The last place that I lived before I came to Honolulu was not actually Chicago, it was Phoenix. And I spent a lot of time driving up and down the road from Tucson, Tempe, and so forth. And my wife and I were eventually settled on Hawaii here after a little stint in the Phoenix area to help take care of a friend who had stage 4 cancer. So fortunately he lived. And so we came, we ended up in Honolulu here. I'm so thrilled to be invited to come and speak to your group. I love trading, I love options. I am an enthusiast. We spend hours and hours every week here educating people about options trading and helping them get started. And our little organization, which started as with three people in a cafe, has just grown enormously. And we're very excited to be now a leader in financial education in Hawaii. So I can't see everybody, but by the show of applause, how many people here have been to Hawaii?
Wow, quite a few, about 15 or so.
Okay, well, excellent, okay. How many surfers do we have in the group? Excellent, because I feel right at home because I'm not a surfer either. I get out on a boogie board and I try to catch those little 3 or 4 foot waves. Anything bigger than 6 foot, you know, and I'm sucking sand. So I'm happy to be out in the water, but I'm not a professional surfer. But I have to come to really admire the way in which the Hawaiians just live to go out in the surf. In fact, very often, school teachers or even business owners will complain, where did all my workers go? Where did all my students go today? Oh, 20-foot surf on the North Shore. Everybody leaves and goes surfing. So that's the life we have in Honolulu here. Meanwhile, I'm bucking to try and get those 6-foot waves. But what I've found is that surfing has such wonderful, it's a wonderful metaphor for trading. And so when I came out here and started teaching trading, I realized I had to find a way of connecting with the local people here that made sense to them. And believe it or not, I have in my classes surfers who come with their sandals and their towels and they sit and they bring their computers and their dogs and their pickups and they learn trading. It's so exciting. So I've been out with them and I'm learning to become a better surfer myself. But this metaphor of the waves is so very, very powerful that what I want to share with you today is something that I hope is not entirely unfamiliar to you. But next time you go to the ocean, or even next time you open your computer and open your platform, you might think a different way about trading. So here we go. We're going to talk about surfing Hawaiian style and trading Hawaiian style. Now, why did I come up with this? Well, I have to tell you the real reason is that in Chicago, where I lived and I traded for 5 or 6 years before I came out here, you know, markets open at 8:30 in the morning and we close by 3. I got to tell you, that's a perfect day. I mean, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you got time to go and do all kinds of things. When I got out to Hawaii here, I found out that markets open at 3:30 in the morning. Do you think I'm going to get up at 3:30 in the morning and trade? I came to Hawaii here for the easy life, to please my beautiful new Japanese wife, and to enjoy semi-retirement under the sun. But I found that the way I had been trading was very easily adapted to Hawaiian style. So there's lots of ways to talk about it. Let me talk about it, first of all, this way. Options trading is not a get-rich-quick scheme, but it is get wealthy slowly. And so what we teach here does not require people to be day traders. You don't have to be in and out the same day on trades. Most of the trades that we do run anywhere from maybe a week to a couple of months or so. And the average trade is probably about 3 weeks. And as options traders, we are primarily sellers of options, not buyers. So we're selling premium, we're waiting for that premium to dissipate over time, and then we buy back those trades at a very inexpensive price, like maybe 5 cents or 10 cents, or if it's a day or two to options expiration, we just let them expire. Then we replace them again. So let me show you the three basic ways in which we make money as options traders here at Honolulu, in Honolulu. Okay. Does everybody see that diagram on the board? If you can see that, give me a clap. All right, I can hear a couple of claps there. All right, so some of you might say, well, that's the Mercedes signal, well, that's the P signal. But what this is that this is the three engine driver of options traders. And what I've done there is I put the Greek symbols up there to help, I think, divide my talk into sections that will make sense to you. First of all, do you notice on the left side, we've got the theta symbol. Theta traders are the ones who sell options and they're waiting for that premium to dissipate, as I spoke about a little while ago. On the right side of the symbol, we have the delta symbol. So this is a different type of trade. A delta trade is not one where we're concerned so much about time value, but we're concerned about price movement. And then the one at the bottom looks like a V, right? Actually, it's not a Greek symbol at all, but everybody calls it a Greek. Vega. Vega refers to volatility, particularly to the implied volatility within an option. So options that are very volatile have very high vega. Options which are low usually have lower vega. And at any one time, you can sit down and you can take an option, say an in-the-money option, and you can figure out to the cent how much delta it has in it, how much theta it has in it, and how much of the price is due to volatility. So we teach all of these ingredients in the classes here. So people, when they look at an option, they don't just say, what's it for? They say, what's in it? And then, what's in it for me? How can we make money? So today I'm primarily going to talk about the volatility component of options trading. Another time we can talk about theta or how to use delta in our trading as well. So let's just move right on and talk a little bit about waves and water and wind and surfing, and hope this makes some sense to you. Okay, let's talk about water. I know that you pretty much live in a dry area of the country. When I was in Arizona, I used to love going up to the White Mountains or up to the Grand Canyon area or over into New Mexico and into the caves. And I love the desert. I grew up in Australia. I grew up right on the edge of the desert. And I got used to living in a very dry environment. But coming to Hawaii here, we're surrounded by water. And so most people spend their recreational time on the water or in the water or watching the water. Let's think about this for a moment. Here are some of the cycles that we find in nature that have some affinity with, or at least they can be considered metaphors for trading, and they're useful in trading. And I've put two or three of them up on the board here. Let's talk about them a little bit. First of all, when you go out on the ocean, everybody has seen the swell. I've gone around all the beaches in Oahu here and over in Maui, and I've sat there and I've counted. What is the time between the peaks in the swell? And I can tell you, for example, I was in Maui just this last weekend, and it's 16 seconds. On the south side of Oahu, it's 14 seconds. On the north shore, it's about 12 seconds. So, of course, conditions change a little bit, but there is such a thing as frequency of change, frequency of change. We're going to come back to that in a moment. In addition to the swell, which comes along every few seconds, we have tides. So there's a high tide and a low tide once, I'd say about twice a day. It's constantly shifting, of course, in concert with the moon phases. But that brings a different kind of movement to the water. The tide is not dependent upon the swell. The swell is not dependent upon the tide. They're independent events, but they both bring change in the level of the water. My most embarrassing story was when I was about 19 years old, living in Australia, I went up with my then girlfriend, fiance. We went up to the Great Barrier Reef and we found ourselves on this beautiful little deserted island. Well, we got there on a boat. I tied my boat up and we went in and we made a little shack. And, you know, I think I caught a fish and a few things like that. And we eventually went to sleep on this completely uninhabited island. And I woke up the next morning, went down to the beach, and guess what? The boat was gone. Not only was it gone, but the water was like 20 feet down, vertically, 20 feet down from where I was, and the boat was nowhere in sight. I was on the desert island with a beautiful woman, my fiance, and there was no way back to civilization. Oh, wasn't too bad, right? So eventually somebody came along and they said, hey, we found this boat floating about 4 miles away. Maybe it's yours. We said, yes, it's my boat. Thank you very much. We eventually paddled back. But I learned from that that there can be huge variations in the tide. That is, the analogy would be here, there's a huge variations in the amount of money supply in the economy. Money can be floating into the markets and floating out of the markets. It doesn't happen on a daily basis. But you can go, for example, and you can find out what the inflows and the outflows into mutual funds are. And that'll give you a clue as to whether the overall tide might be rising or the right tide might be falling as well. That's one way to think about the metaphor. But let's move to the next one. Oh, out in here in Hawaii, you know, we have occasional big storms. I think this last fall we had 3 or 4 of them. And these storms came in and they missed us as usual. And everybody got excited and people stock up food and everybody thinks it's like a prelude to doomsday, you know. You know, paradise, what could go wrong, right? Tsunami. Well, there's another one, a tsunami, yeah. So storms or tsunamis or other major events like that, yeah. Maybe bombers will come over and bomb our ships. Things could happen, right? So these events that occur are what we call large volatility events in the market, similar to the idea. I think if we were to have a crash of 10 or 20% of the market in a week, like happened last August, I would consider that a volatility event. The way in which we measure those is by going out and taking a look at the VIX. So let's look over the last year for one moment and look at, see if there have been count 3 or 4 of these larger volatility events. Most years, you've got at least 2. Very, very rarely do you have only 1 in a year, but often there's 3 or 4. Let's take a look real quickly. So I'm just going to type in dollar, VIX here. And we're going to pull up the VIX for the last year. All right, so here's the VIX for the last year. If you can see that okay, or if you can see the general outlines of it, would you just give me a very brief little clap? I don't hear anybody.
Sorry, I shut the microphone off temporarily so we could not have any feedback to you.
Okay. All right, can everybody see this map of the VIX? If you can, just give me a little hand clap or rap on the bench or something. Thank you. All right, so when we look over this, by the way, this is a thinkorswim platform. It's the one that we use to teach from here. It's my choice because it's the it's basically the state of the art, and it also has lots of cool things on it that we can use, and it's visually very interesting. So what we're looking at here is the thinkorswim platform. So you'll see here those little green marks in there indicate gaps in the chart, but you'll see that in the volatility over the last year, there has been one very major event where the VIX got up as high as about 50 or so, kind of in the middle of the chart there. I'm sure you can see that. Most of the time before that, the VIX was rotating between about 12 and 20. So I consider that to be, you know, obviously a much lower degree of volatility. And then we had this very high volatility event, which was associated with China devaluing its currency last August. And within a week, the VIX shot up and the market dropped about 10%. So, yeah, maybe you could say we were kind of looking for some kind of a correction. Well, when it came, it came. I consider that a volatility event. That's like a tsunami coming in and hitting the beaches here in Hawaii. So most of those kinds of events you cannot prepare for. In other words, you don't know when they're coming. However, in edge trading, we do take them into account, and we always have some kind of deep insurance sitting there just in case an event like this is going to occur. Here is the VIX most recently. You see that the VIX was up at the beginning of February, somewhere around 30, and it dropped down under 20, not until about the last week of February, but it has remained under 20 ever since. So the VIX has been dropping and dropping and dropping. Now, as sellers of options, what we do is we love these big volatility events, because as soon as the VIX starts on its way down from a high like this, we start selling as much as we can. We're selling calls, we're selling deep in the money puts, and we're selling in the money puts both. And we're finding ways to make money doing that. When the VIX is on its way up, we do the opposite. When the VIX is on its way up, we sell calls. Market is usually going down, including out of the money calls and deep in the money calls, both of them. So that's an example of how volatility and general market events may be reflected in the kind of experience that people have with occasional storms or big water events out here in Hawaii. Okay, I'm just gonna skip the part on day trading for a moment. Oh no, let me not do that. So I suppose we have a few day traders in the group. There's always day traders here. We don't do much day trading here. The reason is, you know, who wants to get up at 3:30 in the morning? But you notice that there is a kind of a cycle to the day trade. There is the opening rotation, which lasts about 15 minutes or so, indicated over here. And then there is the close. Both the open and the close are usually the most heavily trafficked part of the day. So there is a rotation that occurs that's day long. And those of you who have sat in the middle of the day waiting to get a fill, knowing that the New York traders are basically out to lunch, you know, you may find that the spreads are wider, the bid ask is impossibly difficult to get, you know, the kind of mark or fill that you want. But later on, maybe in the last hour of trading, your position fills again. Well, what happens is that when volatility picks up and when volume picks up, all right, the bid-ask spreads get a lot closer together, and you usually get your fill as people try to close out their day and take positions in ready for what they expect to be the position that trades tomorrow. There is a regularity to the swell in the ocean. There's a regularity to the tides. The swell in the ocean is not related to the tides any way at all. In fact, none of those are even related either to the storms or to the big events. These are independent from one another. But together, they can create interesting-looking patterns in the water. And surfers look for example, a rising tide with an increasing swell. That would indicate that the peaks are going to be higher, and you're going to get a deeper face as a surfer on the front, and it's going to be much more exciting. The waves will come in a little more frequently, and you won't have to sit out there so long. There are times, on the other hand, when a surfers or even boogie boarders like me, we're sitting out there in the water. We hope the sharks are not coming by because we're just sitting and there's like nothing on the horizon. So part of the enjoyment, part of the game of being on the water are these quiet periods, times when little or nothing is happening. And I've learned, as maybe you have also, that it's very easy for us to unnecessarily or to overtrade. Instead of waiting for the right time to come along, we feel we always have to be in the market. We feel we have to have all of our margin money spent. Or we have to have all our capital invested in something. Well, it's not necessarily true. Sometimes the best thing to do is just sit on your board there, get a little bit of a tan, and wait for the next set to come in. So those sets come in, first of all, very frequently as weeklies, monthlies, quarterlies, and then leaps. These are preset. Everybody knows that. You know when the expiration date is. You know that in most cases on stocks, it's going to be third week of the month. It's on options, on indexes, it's either going to be Thursday. On some of the volatility-related materials, it's also could be on a Tuesday. But they have regular expiration. And so there is this regularity that's set up, and you can know that that's coming in. You can see that that's coming in like a set that's coming in from the ocean. And you can also tell the height of the waves as you see them coming in. In the same way as you can look down the road and you can see, for example, an earnings event occurring. I think about now, if I think about, say, what's going to declare earnings soon, maybe Google. Google's going to declare earnings soon. You go onto your thinkorswim chart, you take a look, and you can see what the expected market maker move is going to be on the stock. That can help you prepare for a way to trade that can be have lower risk, but with significant returns. And I'm going to give you an example of how we do that as well. So the regularity of the market is one thing that we can depend on to bring us profits, significant profits, in our regular basis. Because we're not day traders, we're not going in and out of stock positions or even option positions every daily. We are trading mostly monthlies, some weeklies now and again, and sometimes we're going out several months. But I think one of the important principles of risk management that we teach is that you never put all of your positions into the same expiration. So that's why we spread them out. Right now, I have some leap positions, leaps. I have some which are expiring in October. I have some which are expiring in about 3 months in June. And I probably have about 40 to 50% expiring in a month or so, and a couple of them expiring, you know, this coming Friday, although I've mostly rolled out of those by now. So by having a variety of expected expirations down the road, that's like looking at that set coming in, knowing that you can catch this wave, roll it in, catch the next one, ride that one in, catch the next one, ride that one in. You have a good day surfing, right? You can catch four or five waves in 20 minutes. That's pretty good. So we like these sets, and we like the regularity of options trading for that reason. Four times a year, we have a larger event called earnings season, of course, and I think some of you probably trade earnings. If you do not want to trade earnings, that's perfectly fine. You can pick up your board, paddle into the shore, sit on the shore, and wait till earnings season is over. One way to do that is to simply trade the SPY or trade one of the indexes where you can take advantage of the volatility, but you're not at risk for any one particular position. Lots of stocks move. Oh my goodness, Netflix or many of these stocks have moved $100, $70, $50. Priceline move $100 on an earnings announcement. Well, those are what we call rogue waves, but they occur during earnings season mostly. And when they happen, you know, you have to be prepared. You have to be using the right kind of strategy to ride those, or else you could find yourself brought into the shore much more quickly than you thought you would. So earnings season has a kind of a volatility sequence to it, like what you see here. Four times a year, you see the volatility rise, and then the volatility falls again. But during that period there, and we're just starting one of those periods right now, Alcoa announced earnings yesterday. We usually think of that as the beginning of the earnings season. Alcoa announces, and then for practical purposes, down at the other end, I put AZO. That's one of the stocks that we trade a lot. So from Alcoa to AZO, the most of the market declares its earnings, and particularly most of the well-known stocks. So let's talk about some of the ways and some of the strategies that we use when we're trading these volatility products. If you have a major event that occurs in a stock, such as a stock announcement, such as an earnings announcement, or it could be a takeover announcement or some major other event, think about something like CMG. CMG is a very difficult stock to trade, in my view. It's very fickle. It's subject to public opinion. Stock had dropped, I think, last year from some huge number like 700 down to about 400. I mean, that's a huge roll down in a stock. A lot of these stocks are very much affected by things that we have no control over whatsoever. So we have a stock like that has difficulty maintaining keel. Basically, we don't trade them. There are so many other stocks also in our generally in our portfolios. We do not trade pharmaceuticals for the same reason, is that whatever positions we put on tend to get blown through. And if that happens more than 40% of the time, we just throw the stock away. There's plenty of others out there. By and large, I can tell you that our stable of stocks that we trade options on is basically everything over 200 that can get us a decent return. So right now there are 35 stocks, optionable stocks, over $200. And we'll trade about 15 to 18 of those. Not all of them, as I said, we won't trade the pharmaceuticals. We are a little shy of other stocks like CMG that have a recent fickle history. But there are so many others in that group, like Amazon, Google, and you know, ADS and BOK and the IBB, the index. Those that have got such beautifully bound ranges that we can trade them all day long and make money almost all the time on those. So those are our regulars. And this is one of the techniques that we use. As you are aware, during earnings season, I'm just going to run back here. Here we go. That's me with my surfboard out on the water. but imagine that this is a earnings event. And what I teach students here is that earnings have to be played the right way. So we divide the earnings event on any particular stock into three different trades. First of all, there is the pre-earnings event. That's when you're out on the water there and you're starting to see the wave come in. You know it's going to be high and you start paddling out towards it. All right, let's call that the pre-announcement trade. Then you can also trade and hold your trade over earnings. Now, this would be a different trade. So let's say, for example, you pick a stock that tends to run up just before earnings. Let's say Apple. You see a stock like this will typically run up a few percent before earnings. We put a bull put spread on that, but we always close it out before the actual earnings announcement comes. So we make some money on it, we close it out, we do not hold it through earnings. And sometimes we get quite close to the current price, but we'll make sure that we're out by the previous expiration. Then comes the next trade. The next trade is the earnings announcement itself. Should you trade the earnings announcement itself, given that they're so wild? Well, of course, we can always check the market, make a move, but yeah, those are helpful about 80% of the time, and the other 20% of the time, leave a big hole in your pocket. So again, going through our favored list of stocks, the stocks over 200, we'll pick those that we think have the most or the best chance of returning us a profit within a very short time simply by the crush on the volatility. So we'll put the trade on 1 or 2 days before the earnings announcement, and then we'll close it a few days after. What we normally expect during that time is that the volatility, the implied volatility of the position, is going to be at a peak when we sell it, and we're going to buy it back after the earnings announcement, sometimes within seconds after, sometimes within a few hours or a day later, and maybe sometimes a week later, and we will then have generated a profit, the difference between the initial sell and then the buyback afterwards. Let me see. Let me ask you a question. Those of you who trade earnings announcements, in your view, how long does it take after an earnings announcement for a stock to stabilize in price? Maybe, Eric, you can hear me here. Give me some ideas, but maybe you guys can give me a shout out. How many days or weeks, how long does it take for a stock to stabilize in price after an earnings announcement?
I got one answer for 5 days. Anybody else?
Okay.
3 days. Anybody else? 4 days. So we got three, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 days after.
Yes. Excellent. All right. I think we're thinking on very similar lines here. On average, it's about 4 days. And the stock may stabilize close to the movement price, or it may be, you know, a fair way away, but what you'll see is there'll be one day there, usually within the first week, where the range on the day drops all the way down. Sometimes you'll get a doji, you know, open and close about the same day. And that's an indication that basically the earnings announcement is over, done with. And the volatility has evaporated, and the traders haven't decided where they're going to go next with the stock, but as far as this particular trade is, it's over. So we close the trade right there. Now, once that is done, usually soon after that, traders will decide that they want to send the stock in a certain direction. And so then we end up with the third kind of trade, and that is a post-earnings trade. And so you'll see on the wave up here, you'll see the back of the wave. So we talked about the front of the wave, which has that steep side, then holding it on a different trade, number two, and then number three, the post-earnings trade. So post-earnings trade is a much longer process. Post-earnings trade, we usually go out. My favorite time to go out on this is about 2 months. Usually you can still collect a lot of premium because even though the closest options, the closest strikes have evaporated, the premium is evaporated right after the earnings announcement, there's usually a ripple effect. And the further out months, are still a little inflated compared to what you would normally expect. So guess what we do there? We go out and we do the ripple trade. So I'm using an analogy now that comes from my childhood. When I grew up in Australia, we had this big pond at the back of my house. I used to love to throw stones, and I used to watch the ripples of those stones. So you could throw a rock into the middle of the pond, which was, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 meters out. And then I would count how long it took for the ripples to come back to the shore. Well, it's something similar. If I am, for example, trading something like Priceline, and the price settles after an earnings announcement at, say, $12.50, the price at $10.50, that's $200 down one side, and maybe $14.50 up on the other side, the price will still be rocking around a little bit up there. In other words, the ripple goes out from the place where the stone dropped into the water, and those ripples were held out there. And so there's a brief period of increased volatility in the further out options, both strike-wise and time-wise, that we can make money. So what we do in those is we make note, first of all, of what the pre-announcement price is on those options. And then we set our prices to sell at a 50% premium from there. So if we're looking at a $10 wide strike, let's say at the $14.50 level on Priceline, and the $10.50 level on Priceline as a wide wing iron condor, maybe the combined income from those two would be, say, $1 out of $10. And we would expect we put an order in to sell them as a pair for $1.50 instead of a dollar. And we get filled most of the time. In other words, that volatility event brings money to us, but now stock is stabilized, very safe trade. We're somewhere around 95% probability, but we've collected good money for it. If we don't feel like we connect enough, and for example, I will almost never do a trade if I'm going to collect like 50 cents. I would never do a trade for 50 cents. But I'm willing to go out another month if I can collect at least another 50 cents, and sometimes even more. Maybe I'll get $1.20, $1.40 for it if I maybe cheat on one side a little bit and pull one of the strikes and we'll get a little bit more money that way. That way I end up with like about 8% return, which is kind of my standard, what I like to get each month. So ripple trading, doing this wide beam iron condors out there. And I like to go out 2 months for another reason, not only to collect more money, but of course bringing more money also reduces your risk. But in most cases, the direction of a stock price in the week to 10 days after the earnings announcement is going to set the trend for the next 2 months. Take a stock like Amazon, which is like a classic case. Amazon almost always ends up following its moving average out to the right, and you can put a wide-wing iron condor on that fairly easily. In fact, you can just put a regular iron condor on there as well. You don't have to go so far out. And you can collect money, and that will generally tend to last about 2 months. And what will happen after the 2 months is that as we start heading into next horizon event, that is the new next earnings announcement, stock will start to move again in anticipation of the new earnings announcement. So at that particular time, may close out or keep the wide-wing iron condor, depending upon how profitable it is. But now what are we back to? Now we're back to a pre-earnings trade, because now we're doing a pre-earnings trade in view of the next earnings announcement, which is coming down the road. So that's the whole cycle, pre-earnings, over-earnings, and then post-earnings. And we keep in the market on many of these stocks doing this. We try to usually get about 80% of our trades are profitable. We try to get 8% a month, and this tends to work pretty well. By staying in the market, but by only trading, or mostly trading volatility events, such as I've described to you here.
So let me see what else I wanted to say about rumors. Not much else there. Let's bring down a little bit. Trades, leaps, earnings, trading the rules. Okay, we'll go from there.
Well, maybe I should take now a little breather and answer some questions for you. And I'll do that, and then I'm going to talk to you a little bit about our organization and what we do. And I have an offer for you that I think you'll find very interesting. So, Eric, let's answer some questions, and we'll talk about trading Hawaiian style. Okay. Trading, riding the surfing, surfing the waves of trading. Yeah.
All right. Anybody got a question? No.
Hi, Jim.
Good evening.
Good evening, Jim.
Okay. I was checking to see if this mic was on. do you take Delta into consideration in your selection of strikes?
Yes, because you cannot calculate delta unless you have particular strikes in mind. So yeah, the strikes are a specific, are a very important part of any calculation. However, delta trades are usually ones that we do where the stock is moving, and the kind of trades that I'm talking about here with volatility today are ones where we're making money off the volatility on the stock, whether or not the stock is moving. So I would say mostly on our volatility trades here, we take neutral position. In other words, we really don't care about the delta. And theta is important. Vega, volatility is important. But the kind of trading where we take a lot of notice of delta would be a different kind of trade. Those would be like swing trading. In swing trading, that's that's where we're paying more notice than this kind of trading. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and I agree with you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, Delta is very important. For example, right now, we trade the SPX and we trade the SPY using deep in the money positions where we're trying to get a delta of 0.9 or more. And if we can't do 0.9 or more, we just don't do the trade. Also, you should know that as we get close to monthly expiration, delta becomes more and more important. Theta becomes less and less important. Delta becomes more and more important as you head into those last 3 or 4 days of trading, particularly during expiration week. One reason is there's basically no theta left, or at least you should be out of the trade and have it rolled it into the next month. That's if you've collected maybe 90% of the available profit on the trade, you should be out of it and roll it over into the next one. At that particular point, we will start doing some delta trades if we see the volatility starting to pick up, or we start to see the average true range, the ATR of the stock, starting to move up a little bit. Our favorite stock to trade this way, by the way, is Priceline. Priceline was a most profitable trade, most profitable stock last year, because it gives you everything. It gives you delta, it gives you theta, it gives you volatility, and it's a very predictable stock. Stock recently went down to 950, 975, hit the bottom of the range, that tube, you know, the bouncing range. So at that particular point, we put in very deep in the money put positions, selling like the 1300 or 1400 put, and we just waited. And when we do that, Jim, delta is our making money, as our money making tool at that particular point. We're not concerned about theta. We are simply trying to sell those deep in the money positions for a very high price and buy them back at a more moderate price. And that difference between the two is profit. And we can only do that when we can get a delta of 0.9 or more.
This is Roger.
Roger, hi.
When you're doing your pre-earnings or you hold over earnings or you're doing your post-earnings, which strategies are you using?
Okay, we are using, I would say in the pre-earnings, we're mostly using either bull put spreads or bear call spreads. So these are usually directional trades where we're expecting the price to pull away from our strikes. So we might sell and get, say, a $2 credit out of $5 or $2 credit out of $10. We want that to drop away, and on a directional trade, that'll drop down to a dollar or maybe 50 cents or something like that by the time you know, the earnings announcement arrives. But we always close the trade up because we don't want to hold it over earnings, because we could be $50 off tomorrow.
You're into a trade and you're start to go against you.
Yes.
Do you just exit or do you adjust?
There are seven things to do once a trade starts to go against you. One of them is to do nothing. Because if a trade goes against you today, it may come back the other way tomorrow. Who knows, right? But basically, we allow our sold strikes to be our deadlines. We know where our cutoff points are. We know where our break-even points are. And if the stock moves on a, say, on an iron condor, or if it moves on our strikes, and it looks like the whole market is heading in a certain direction, we do not close out the trade. What we do instead is we employ one of the six remaining remedies. One of those, for example, could be for us to sell an opposite position. So if I have a bull put spread where I've sold a put and I bought a lower put for protection, and I have a fairly strong guess that the stock is not going to go very far from where the current price, I may sell calls as well and turn it into an iron condor. So that's one thing to do, just bring in more money. But there's like five or six other things that you can do. So if the position starts to go against me, no, we do not close it out. But we hold it because we believe in our strategy and our, you know, we keep a track of our strategies. If they work 80, 90% of the time, that's good enough for us.
One other thing. I was just curious, over there in Hawaii, do you guys have a good internet connection?
Is this internet connection okay for you?
Oh, that's fine.
Great, yeah. I would say it depends where you are, but by and large, it's the regular home-based internet's pretty good. You know, I have a cable company at home, and then I have separate wireless line that comes, a separate internet cable that comes in through fiber optics into my building. So I don't use my cable company, nor do I use my phone company. I use the fiber optics, and it's immaculate. Wish I could tell you the name of the company that manufactures it. I think it's Cisco.
This is Randy. My question is, how early do you place those trades?
It's a great question. You have to look at the individual stock and see how it's doing. And go back and look at the last four or five earnings announcements. And usually the stock will tell you how much lead time you need. Now, we take a stock like AZO, which is one of my favorites to trade. We usually almost always put a bull put spread on AZO. We do it up to the week before the earnings announcement. And we'll put that on about a month before. Now, there are other stocks like Apple. We basically stopped trading Apple. It's so disappointing. But Apple has now decided it only wants to move about a week or four or five trading days before the earnings announcement. So, you know, it's shortened its period down considerably. Then there are other stocks that really don't care. It makes no difference to them. If you get a stock like ADS or ICE or some of those stocks, there isn't a big buildup in volume before the earnings announcement. So check price direction and check volume, say in the month before, and let the chart tell you when the buildup happens. So it's not one size fits all.
Actually have a question, and then I'm going to turn it over to Clark, and he'll ask you a question. You sure. Said that leading into earnings in the pre-stage, you're using vertical credit spreads with a directional. And then in the post-earnings, I got it that you're probably using a wide-wing iron condor. What about trading over earnings?
Over earnings, we're usually using wide-wing iron condors. In other words, we pick the market maker move, the expected market maker move. Let's pick one up. Let's go right there right now. I've got one. I had one we could look at. Let's see. I believe Google earnings is coming up next week. Let's take a look on that. Rick's, you just type in Google. Okay, looking at Google, I'm going to pull this up, year-to-date chart. So if we look at Google, you see year-to-date, the chart, stock is going nowhere at all. It's exactly the same price it was on January the 1st or January the 2nd. I mean, exactly the same price to the dollar. And we also see the stock is a very stable period, right? Everybody sees that looking there. But look at the market maker move on this, going to the trade tab now, typing in Google, G-O-O-G-L, and I'm going to pick up next week, fourth week of April, and I'm opening the singles because those are going to give me a good reach. The implied volatility on this right now, I don't know if you can see that up on the lower, see the middle white up here, you can see that the expected market maker move on this is $42. So I do not want to place my strikes, my sold strikes, inside that. I would want to go outside that. I would have to look at the history of the stock a little bit to see, but I would probably increase that by about 20%. So on this stock, I'm probably going to put my Google strikes about $50 wide each side. I would not sell those. I mean, you guys have been watching the charts long enough, you know that very often when a stock declares larger price stock like this declares earnings and the stock moves or gaps in the market, it usually goes to a particular strike. And that particular strike can usually be known one side or the other. So I don't want to be within that. That's a war zone. I don't want to be inside that because I'm pretty much bound to lose money. Now, on the other hand, I don't want to buy a position here. I don't want to be buying these options when they're at such a high price. But if I buy them the stock move does not match the market maker, then I'm going to lose lots of money. So I don't want to do that either. So I want to be safe, even if I take a little bit less money in when I do the trade. And that way, you know, you can keep a good track record on your positions. But, you know, none of these work 100% of the time. I'd say on Google, we're probably right 4 out of 5 times. But that's good enough for me.
Hi, Graham. This is Bart. I was just wondering if you were holding trade positions over New Year's. And, of course, remember, we had bad news from China before the markets in the States opened up after the New Year's holiday, and
yes,
the markets opened up down and kept going down. Just wondering how you reacted to that situation.
I would say that we have a consultation that we teach with a CPA in December of each year, and we explain to our students, you know, basically that they need to be wise about the way in which they handle their positions. So let's say, for example, if you have significant profit in your account, then by closing out any negative positions that you have, you can help reduce the loss on, you can help reduce your overall taxable income and that. So you would, you know, sell your losers and hold your long positions into the new year. We didn't do that very much this last year. The year was a successful year, but most people decided that they just wanted to close everything out by around December the 15th and not even trade through the holidays at all. And, you know, there's some wisdom to that. I said, I would say in most accounts, we did have some January positions on and probably some March positions on. However, the price action at the beginning of January helped us to triggered us to put on our, you know, start selling calls. So we sold calls all the way through January. So I don't think we sold any puts at all. So again, we just let the market tell us. Whenever you see a gap up or a gap down, that's a sign that traders are not going back, and we shouldn't go back either. You can't fight the market. So I would say the end of last August and the beginning of January this year, both challenging periods, but our strategies held up pretty well, and we were able to come out of them pretty much flat and didn't start making money again until February. Well, that's a very interesting question. I would say no, we haven't noticed much difference. Because our positions are largely determined by, how can I say this? If I have a short position and I get put stock, I'm happy to hold the stock because I got 4 days to get out of this thing. And there's ways I can make money for it during that period. So I tell people, and we show people, not be afraid of getting put stock. So if we have a short put and that gets triggered even a week before or 2 or 3 days before, just treat it as if the option was still there. And you're going to close it out pretty soon anyway. So Now, on the other hand, if you short calls and you end up a short position, yeah, that can be more serious. You've really got a day to get out of it. So basically, you have to move quickly on those. You're going to get a call from your broker. So, yeah, so I haven't noticed any difference last year to previous years, no.
I was trade around the ex-dividend date.
It doesn't make any difference to options because our position is net-net even. In other words, if I'm selling 10 puts and buying 10 puts for protection, I'm net-net. It doesn't make any difference.
Okay, I have one other question. Since you're trading with these really higher priced stocks, what kind of account size are you looking at for your students to maintain?
Okay, good question. Let me give you a brief outline of how we set up and structure the accounts. Maybe I can do it on the board. Here we go. Page here, here we go. So we use simulated trading to teach, and every person, every student is given $100,000. What we do is we teach them how to divide that up into 20 accounts or 20 little boxes, about $5,000 each. And when I do that, I might have one, maybe a Netflix. And so we'll take the $5,000 and we will trade varying the strikes or varying the amount of credits that we get for the position and trade that through to profitability. And then we have another little box over here, let's say it would be IIB. And we have another one over here that is going to say Amazon. So it's kind of an immersion experience. We throw a lot of stuff at them really quickly so they get practice doing lots and lots of trades. In 10 weeks, most of the students should do 100 to 200 trades from beginning to end. And not only that, record them all and be able to calculate the profitability of the overall trading that they did, not just on the individual ones as well. So that's how we basically set them up. We set each one up into little boxes of risk, about $5,000 each. And then if you have an account that's, say, a $50,000 account, well, you might decide to reduce that to maybe $2,500 of each. But by keeping somewhere between 15 and 20 of your little boxes filled with trades, with a trade, you get diversity. And we really discourage traders from risking any more than 5% of their capital on any one particular position. Does that answer your question? Okay, good. So if someone starts out with, a basic Apex account of $25,000, they can still trade these. They can trade, two or three contracts at a time and make good money. And I would certainly recommend that they start out with one or two contracts. And I'm going to make an exception here. That's why I was hesitating. This would not apply to the SPX. The SPX is equivalent to 10 SPY. And so I don't introduce new students to the SPX. That's really for the advanced course. And we stick them with the SPY. The very first stock that I teach, the first four weeks when people come in, all we trade is the SPY. We don't trade anything else because I don't want to be dealing with expiration and dividend assignments and all that kind of stuff. I just want to deal with cash settled indexes like the SPY And that simplifies things. And then we move into individual stocks a little bit later. Hi, Ben. Yeah.
Portfolio is working for you all the time? Or is it
I would say probably between 80 and 100%. Most of the portfolio is working for us most of the time. Yeah.
Questions. All right, well, I think we're done with the Q&A of this part, so go ahead.
All right, thank you so much. We have a few minutes left here. I want to find a way to encourage you to come out to Hawaii and maybe take a dip and participate with us in one of our workshops out here. This summer, we're going to be doing a workshop for beginning traders, and we're going to be doing one for advanced traders. I'm going to send to Eric a link that everybody who is on this call will be able to be entitled to a 30% discount on the events, and that's basically to help you subsidize your airfare to come out. Our courses are not expensive. For example, our 10-week course for our meetup members is only $275. Of course, we can't expect people to come out for 10 weeks from Arizona, but if you come out for our four-day intensive course, which I haven't got a price out yet, but it'll be a few hundred dollars, but we'll give you the same price as we give our meetup members here, and that will be sometime in around the middle of July. So thank you so much for your questions. To get in touch with me, I want to show you our website. This is our website. It's called HonoluluOptionsTraders.com. And this is a very deep site. It has like 100 pages of stuff on there. We've got all of our classes on here. We have a vault of materials. Some of this is password required. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to set up a special page for the your group in Phoenix. And we're going to have this offer that I mentioned to you outlined there. Plus, I'll give you a link to lots of other things, including access to our vault here, which has pages and pages of material that may be of interest to you as well. Most of the time, when people come to the page here, you'll see a slider. And people click on the slider, and it takes them through. And you'll actually see your own slider on there. It'll slide, it'll say Prime Group, and have a picture of Phoenix or Arizona or something like that on there. And you click on that, it'll be up for 30 days. And I hope you enjoy the gifts that we want to make available to you. And all of this is to encourage you to come out here, encourage our local traders here. We have many people here who are retiring military. We have traders who are retirees from the mainland, local people as well. And they're just a lot of fun. We have high school students, and we have people in their 70s. We have people who have no experience at all. We have people who have 20,000 hours. And we even have professionals. We have CFPs, financial planners. We have CPAs. We have attorneys. We have people who run portfolios for large companies who come and take our classes here because we're the only people who are teaching options trading here. So please be part of us. We would like to see you come out. And not only that, we'll show you where the best beaches are. Aloha.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us, Graham. I appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, everybody, for your thoughts and your questions.